The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We believe that our ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on earth, belongs to God, and our role is that of a trusted manager.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And good morning, everyone, to Today's Issues. It is Tuesday, August 27. I am sitting in for Tim Wildman this week and joined in studio by number one son, hey, Wesley Wildman.
That's right, number one son. You know, I was just thinking, with Dad not being here, you know, obviously, in most days, he's the host, the head host here of the Today's Issues. He's not here, so what would keep us from just talking about whatever we want to talk about? Hockey, baseball, travel ball?
Nothing.
Hunting?
Nothing.
The passions of her, own?
Nothing would stop us from doing that.
He wouldn't know.
On our last day here at AFA.
That's right. Okay.
Now, you are passionate about hunting. As soon as you said that, Brent Creeley, our producer,
he
pointed at you. He's passionate about hunting.
Yeah. These are some extracurricular activities or hobbies that I enjoy. I enjoy hunting. I enjoy coaching my son's baseball team. We get together and do competitive baseball here locally in our area, and I enjoy being out there with the boys and doing something different. So I have my own set of fun things I like to do outside of work, but you know what? You're right. We don't want it to be our last day, so we're going to get back on message.
I discovered that you were a huge hunting fan.
Mm-hmm.
We went on a trip somewhere. We were flying somewhere.
Tell you what you know about hunting when you call it a hunting fan. Okay, go ahead.
Admittedly, I'm not a hunting guy.
Fan, yeah.
But I was seated next to you.
Yeah.
And we're waiting to, you know, before we take off.
It was like your first introduction of asking me about
popped open your laptop and we're checking your
trail cameras,
photos.
Maps,
yes,
notes.
I thought, what are you, a Navy SEAL? Yeah, right. What is this? What are you doing? And it was all about hunting. So
I got some good memories though. But my granddad on my mom's side introduced me to the woods and outdoors and hunting and camping and all that. So there are a lot of memories are built with dads and fathers and sons and granddads and grandsons out there in the woods. So enjoyed it.
Yeah, that brings back painful memories for me. My dad used to go hunting and didn't take me.
It's painful memories.
Yeah, so thanks for that.
Because you didn't like it because it was cold,
No, it wasn't. It was because my dad, when he went hunting, it was with his friends at work.
Okay.
And they would go up to mountains and it was just kind of
his
way
to get
away.
Because you were a pansy.
No, I probably would have wound up liking him.
Okay, yeah.
And now we are talking.
Yeah.
So I'll move us along from my painful memories that Wesley has dredged up from the depths of my soul. Chris Woodward joins us.
Now, hello.
Chris, you like hunting?
I have never actually been deer hunting. I have been squirrel hunting and other things. But I've never actually I'm not opposed to it. I enjoy eating deer. It's fantastic food. But I've never actually been deer hunting. Mm. I don't know. That, you know, like, could you sit in the deer stand with like ear pods at a very low volume or something? Okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't be an
issue. I would need to listen to like a podcast or, you know, a ball game or something.
Yeah.
Although a ball game might not be good for me because I might, you know, yell
might
out.
Yell.
Hey!
Well, nowadays with iPads, you know, when I'll usually take a couple of the bigger kids.
Yeah.
And take them an iPad, you know, watch something, play a game on there. And
good.
Then,
good.
When deer come out, hey, be still, don't move.
Still,
yeah. So.
Teach them.
Yeah.
Teach them to be
so
quiet.
Yeah. And Chris, you could take an iPad too.
Sit there and update AFN.net.
That's right.
As I watch for deer.
Speaking of AFN.net,
yes.
Hey, what's the first story of the day?
Well, you know, I was told many weeks and months ago by President Tim Wildman to bring in something good every once in a while. So we do have a good news story to begin with. Israel has rescued another hostage abducted by Hamas terrorists on October 7th. This man is 52-year-old Kaid Farhan Al-Qadi, if I said his name correctly. He was one of eight people of Israel's Arab Bedouin minority who were abducted on October 7th. He was working at a guard at a factory that was overrun by Hamas terrorists, and he is the father of 11 children, and nearly a year after he was abducted, he was found alive and is in hospital, as Fred would say, and he has been reunited with his family. No doubt a very good story here, and I have shared that on our Facebook page.
And that, Wesley, that is almost a year. We're talking about October 7th. One of us mentioned here before the show started, as we were just preparing for it to start, there's no telling what this guy's going to tell the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, and others in the Israeli intelligence branch. What happened to a lot of these hostages? I'm sure there's going to be some horror stories.
Yeah, I would expect some horror stories. Also, I'd expect for them, hopefully, maybe some intel or something that may help the Israeli security. Hopefully. Chris, now, I didn't catch this, and I hadn't read the full story. So how did he get recovered or found? Did he manage to escape, or did they unshackle him from chains, or how did they find him?
I don't have that information in the AP story on our website, but
it's being called a complex operation. So there's your point, it may be a lot of moving parts. They were able to pinpoint him, apparently, from some intelligence. So I'm guessing maybe somebody told him, told the IDF or intelligence.
They had a hostage over here.
Yeah, and we think that he's located. They were able to pinpoint it.
Right.
And then they said in a complex operation in southern Gaza, they were able to free Kaid Farhan Al-Qadi. So, I guess good for his family.
Yeah, and I wonder, does that mean, I mean, that makes you think, well, there are probably some more hostages still alive, right?
Or I would hope so.
I hope so, yeah.
Because a lot of us have wondered if these folks are dead, because it's been so long.
Well, and the newsman in me, sometimes I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hopeful, but at the same time, you got the odds are not in your favor.
Yeah.
Yeah, we covered this. I looked this up about a month ago on Today's Issues Live. I forgot what the numbers were, but there were a percentage that they said were still alive, and it said in there that the reason they thought they were alive is because they had been seen, or there'd been evidence of hostages still alive. So hopefully there's more stories like this in the coming days that we can report on.
That's right. All right. Well, we are going to, before we hit any more stories, we want to welcome to the program one of our, I'm sure our show's listeners' favorite guests that we have on is Dr. Frank Turek, host of Cross Examined, heard Saturdays on American Family Radio at 9 a.m. Central Time, and Sunday the show is repeated at 4 p.m. Central Time. Frank, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Gentlemen, how is everyone today?
Doing well. We're doing,
as Dave Ramsey would say, better than I deserve.
Yeah, there you go. How are you doing? Where are you located? Are you the road, or are you at home, or what?
I'm just south of Charlotte, but next week we'll be at the University of Texas at Dallas. That's September 5th. Then I'll be at Calvary Chapel, Tucson, with my friend Charlie Kirk and Pastor Robert Furrow. And then on September 9th, we'll be at Arizona State University down there in Tempe, Arizona. So we're starting up our college tour doing I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
Sun devils need Jesus, Frank.
They do. We all do, don't we?
Amen.
Hey, I do get to I do watch sometimes videos of you on college campuses. I don't always know. I don't always check the dates, so I don't know how old some of these are. But interesting, you mentioned you're going to be with Charlie Kirk. He's getting some play, too. He's very well known, obviously, but he goes on college campuses a lot, too. So just tell me before we do have a question, something we want to discuss with you, but how is it on college campuses today? And have things changed dramatically from, say, 5 years ago, or is it still kind of the same challenge? Let's put it that way.
Well, I would say that now, Ed, the top three objections to Christianity on college campuses are morality, morality, and morality. Mm. In other words, people are objecting to Christian, what they perceive to be Christian morality. Of course, they have no standard by which to judge Christian morality, because right. if there is no God, there is nothing ultimately right or wrong. Everything's just a matter of opinion. Mm-hmm. But they will come out and say that, you know, Christian prohibitions on, say, abortion or homosexuality or whatever are somehow immoral. These people don't realize they're stealing a moral standard from God to even say anything is moral or immoral. So right. I'm always asking them questions. Well, what's your moral standard? Why do you think that's true? Why do you think that's right? They are unwittingly stealing a standard from God while claiming he doesn't exist. In effect, they have to sit in God's lap to slap his face.
Mm-hmm. So how do they respond? And I have seen some videos, so I know, but our listeners probably don't. How do these college kids respond when you challenge them on their right to judge Christian morality without a moral standard of their own? How do they respond?
I think it's kind of the same way for anybody, Ed, when you think about it. I think it's kind of the same response that Paul had on Mars Hill. Some believe, some mock, and some say, well, I'll hear you again.
Yeah.
You know, those are the three.
Interesting.
It's either I agree with you, I don't agree with you, or I'll consider it.
Hey, I got a question. How complicated has it been for y'all to get on college campuses? I guess it would determine the college, but how complicated has it been?
Well, we just need a Christian group to invite us. So it's easy. If a Christian group is on a state-funded school, they can't say no. The state-funded schools can't say no. But we just need a Christian group on campus to invite us. That's how we get invited on. So if anybody is at a college campus right now in a Christian group, just go to crossexamine.org. That's crossexamine with a D on the end of it, and .org, and then invite us to campus, and we'll figure out a way to get there. We don't charge students anything.
So an example would be like Baptist Student Union, if they were interested at...
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, or Ratio Christi, or yep, Crew, or right. InterVarsity, or BCM. Any of these groups can invite us.
That's wonderful.
And you usually have a pretty good turnout at these?
Yeah, we do. We get anywhere from, say, 250 to... We had one at Purdue. We had 1,200. So
oh,
it really
wow.
depends.
Wonderful. That's outstanding.
It really just depends on how well it's promoted. I'd say probably the average, Ed, is probably like 350, 400 people.
Yeah.
So...
That's great. That's
yeah.
great. Hey, well, listen, folks, if you're tuning in just now, we are speaking with Dr. Frank Turek, host of Cross Examined, heard Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time, Sundays at 4 p.m. Central Time on AFR. And Frank, we did want to talk to you about something that I saw this morning, and I'm going to let Chris Woodward set this up with a little bit of audio. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Ed, it's Christopher.
Yeah. Christopher.
Christopher, Ed.
Christopher.
Christ Bear.
Yeah, there you go.
Three people on this planet call me Christopher, and Frank is one of them. The other are Tim and my mom. But anyway, so a big story on Fox, and understandably so. Human Rights Campaign President Kelly Robinson, who is also an ally of Vice President Kamala Harris, she spoke at a recent panel discussion at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And as often the case, people say things, and then a few days go by, and people get the video, and these become stories. And this is why. In this video that we're about to play, or this piece of audio, Kelly Robinson urges a reimagining of so-called democracy beyond the Constitution at this panel discussion. Clip 4.
We can't just worry about protecting democracy. In this moment, we've got to reimagine it with people that look and love like us at the center. And I think for us right now, it's about reimagining freedom and this American story in a way that is more revolutionary than what our founders actually put down on that little piece of paper, but instead is the type of democracy that is by and for all of the people of this country. That's the opportunity that we have.
Now, Frank, the reason this struck me is, to me, the clear and obvious disdain that this individual, again, what this is the president of the Human Rights Campaign, mm-hmm. you said?
Kelly Robinson.
Christopher.
Yeah,
the clear disdain she had for the Constitution, calling it a little piece of paper. Other people have referred to little pieces of paper before. This just seemed striking to me, and it seemed to indicate, as if we needed any further proof, that the radical left, their intentions are to get rid of that little piece of paper and replace it with something else. What's your take?
Well, there's only two ways to govern, by principle or power. Now, the Constitution is principle. You have what we agree to be basic human rights in the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights. If we're going to ignore that and we're going to say we don't have any standard by which we're governing ourselves but our own whims, then it's all about power. That's why the left does not want to debate so many issues. They want to cancel the debate because they can't win on principle. They can't win by arguing their position. They can only win by implementing what they want through the raw abuse of power. So if they can get rid of the Constitution, then they can get away or they can get rid of the First Amendment, which says that Congress shall pass no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. See, she's from the so-called human rights campaign, which is really not about human rights. It's just about whatever the LGBTQ community wants. And when so-called gay rights come against, say, religious rights, they think that gay rights must always overpower religious rights. So you don't have a right to your view if it in any way interferes with what someone who identifies as LGBTQ wants. So if you notice in her quote here, Ed, what I found very interesting, in addition to her just dismissing the Constitution as just a piece of paper, she said this: we can't just worry about protecting democracy. All right, let me stop right here. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic, a representative republic, but I'll give her grace on that. I understand what she's saying, okay? And by the way, she's saying this at a convention where the nominee did not get one vote.
Right.
They kicked the guy out who got all the votes, yeah, and said, here's
good
our
point.
New nominee.
Right.
All right.
Let's not forget that.
But here's the next interesting statement. She said, in this moment, we've got to reimagine it with people that look and love like us at the center. Mm-hmm. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to break this to you, but you cannot establish a civilization on homosexuality.
Right.
Yeah.
It's impossible. We would be, if that is the center, that's what she said, people that look and love like us at the center. There's no civilization that can survive if homosexuality is at the center.
And that's what I was going to ask you, Frank. Yeah. What do you think she means by look like and love like? Because you and I both know, and we all know here, that defining words matter.
Right.
And when you go to college campuses, that's one of the first things I've seen you do is let's define what you mean by fill in the blank. And in this case, she says look like or love like. What do you think she means by that?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what it seems to me she's saying at the center as if same-sex relationships ought to be elevated above every other relationship, mm-hmm, by the force of law, which is what the so-called Equality Act will do.
Right.
That's what you'll get if you get Democrats in the White House and the Congress. You'll get the so-called Equality Act, which is not equality at all. It means that everything LGBTQ would usurp heterosexual relationships, which is the complete inverse of what any society can tolerate. Forget the Bible for a second. We're not even talking about the Bible here. We're talking about just basic biology, right?
Right?
This is just men and women coming together, procreating and nurturing the next generation. You can't do that through homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're thinking, and by the way, we should not be surprised.
You said that unapologetically.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at Romans chapter 1, where Paul says, if you suppress the truth in unrighteousness to go your own way, particularly on the sexual issues, God will give you over to futile thinking. This is futile thinking right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? To think you can establish at the center of a society on homosexuality. It's impossible.
Or right? more even drill down a little deeper, a society built on rebellion against God.
Mm. Yes,
that doesn't end well.
No. No,
because that's part of the Romans 1 point. Look, just broadly speaking, because the Democratic Party and those on the left, especially the radical left wing of that party, which is increasingly growing in numbers, it seems to me that when you talk about governing a society based on principle as opposed to power, the Constitution, according to its principles, restricts the power of the federal government.
Yes,
that's what
the Bill of Rights
is
all about.
It separates separation of powers, checks and balances, mm-hmm. because the founding fathers, those men that she spoke about in such a disdainful way, they understood you cannot aggregate power in the hands of a few. You've got to disperse the power. But the left, including the points that she was making, the left increasingly wants to grab all the power and claw it towards the middle where they sit. And it seems to me that is laying out a blueprint for what they actually want to do. I don't want to overspeak and say it's necessarily communist or fascist, but it seems to be heading in that direction.
Well, it's certainly going against the natural order of things. It's going against natural law. And what we mean by natural law, I'm not talking about gravity here. I'm talking right. about the design of the body and how our bodies were made to interact with one another. That's quite obvious. And yet people want to somehow rebel against that. And when they do so, this is why, by the way, the Apostle Paul says sexual sin is the only sin yep. where you're rebelling against your own body, in
yeah,
effect.
Right.
And that seems to be what he means. It's going against how nature or how God created us.
Hmm. Go ahead, Chris.
I have a
question there. Frank, when we have you on from time to time to talk about cultural issues or governmental issues, crazy things in government that are a result of culture falling away from the Lord, you have at times mentioned that, and I'm paraphrasing, it's the church's fault.
Yeah.
So is some of what we're discussing here the result of people replacing the swift kick in the pants that Americans used to get in church with the seven ways on how to have a great week?
Yeah, I think so, Christopher. I think you're absolutely right. Because we're not about making disciples anymore. We're about amusing the goats rather than feeding the sheep. And I had a question that is on our podcast that'll come out today. It's not broadcast here on AFR, but you can listen to it in the same place you might hear the AFR podcast. Just look for the I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast. It's going to air this afternoon. Because I had a question from someone saying, I wanted to set up a voter registration table in my church, and I'm getting all sorts of pushback. And one of the aspects of the pushback was, well, we don't want to be divisive. We want this to be a welcoming place for all people. So how do you respond to that objection? And my response is, this is the mistake we make when we think the church is primarily for unbelievers. The church is not for unbelievers. Yeah. The church is for believers. Now, we want to be as welcoming as possible, but we're not going to change our doctrine in order to welcome people into a belief system that we're not honest about. This isn't bait and switch.
Right.
We're not supposed to have such an attractive model that we're attracting people to the culture rather than attracting people to Christ. We have to say, here's what we believe and why we believe it. And we're not going to change the doctrine to attract people into the church. We're gonna be welcoming, but we're going to say, hey, this is what we believe, and here's why. So this idea that we couldn't even have a church registration or a table in a church to register people to vote because that would be divisive is not loving our neighbor, because we want to love our neighbor. We want to make sure that we put laws in place to protect innocent people from evil. And if we don't register Christians to vote, we're not doing that.
Yeah, and on that topic, the burden is not on the person who's interested in putting up a registration to be divisive or not be divisive. That's the thing that I've had discussions with people, and it's frustrating because they're so concerned about causing division when in reality they're just living out their faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, well, why are you carrying around the burden of other people not happy with what you're doing when you're just following the scriptures?
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't be worried about that. Is it? Now, obviously, you want to go as much as possible, live at peace with all men, and you want to be able to do so in a way that's constructive and informative and helpful. But at the same time, at the end of the day, there are parts of your faith as a Christian from scripture that other people are not going to agree with. And that's okay.
Yeah, in fact, Jesus said that I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. I'm going to divide mother and daughter, father and son. And many people listening to us right now realize that passage is true because we're divided in our own family over Jesus, and we ought to be. Yeah. He didn't come to bring unity with the world. He came to bring unity in the church. By the way, I love the iVoter site. Can you tell us the website for that?
Yeah, that's iVoterGuide.com.
iVoterGuide.com. Friends, you need to go there, put your address in. It'll tell you exactly where the candidates stand. It's great.
Thank you, Frank.
Yes,
appreciate
that.
You mentioning that. iVoterGuide.com.
Hey, when is that going to be complete for the feds? No, I mean, when are the...
They are working to compare the
platforms.
I think it's going to be up. That part will be up.
I thought you meant for the feds. Like, okay.
Yeah. Hey, give us real quickly your website, Frank.
Crossexamine.org. Crossexamine with a D on the end of it, .org. Invite us to church. Invite us to campus. We'll be there.
We'll be right back, folks. If ending babies' lives in their mothers' wombs isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. And in a shocking stance, the Dems' VP nominee, Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you're pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help to defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back to today's issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. Joining me in studio, Wesley Wildman and Christopher Woodward. Folks,
Thank you, Woodward.
Yes. Before the end of the break, we had Dr. Frank Turek on, always outstanding. But he did ask a question there at the end about the iVoter Guide. iVoter Guide is, AFR work in conjunction with the great folks at iVoter Guide, which is, I guess, a division of AFA Action.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of were rushed at the end of the, before the break. Before early voting starts, we will have at iVoter Guide a comparison of the political party platforms and information related to the choices that folks need to make at the federal level. And I guess probably what Frank was talking about was the presidential race between former President Donald Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris. So all that information is scheduled to be up before early voting begins in your state. If you go to iVoterGuide.com, iVoterGuide has information. If you're not registered, it has information. Maybe you're embarrassed. Okay, there's a lot of folks who have not been in the habit of voting, and they're embarrassed to ask somebody and to admit they're not registered. Okay, we get that. You can go to iVoter Guide and check your state, find the deadlines for getting registered and how to do that, and you may be able to. I've been registered to vote since just after I got out of high school, so it's been a while since I've had to visit one of those. You may be able to even do that online. Mm-hmm. And in your state. But all that information will be provided for you at iVoterGuide.com. All right, Christopher, I hope I don't have to call you Christopher from now on.
You can call me whatever you want as long as I keep a job.
All right.
I'll pick up your dry cleaning. I told Tim the same thing.
Okay.
I'll even make the popcorn.
All right.
But anyway, I want to direct people to another story, and this could very well have been the lead story earlier in the program. It's on our website. It's everywhere. Mark Zuckerberg, the chief executive officer of Meta, says senior Biden administration officials pressured Facebook to censor, his words, some COVID-19 content during the pandemic and vowed that the social media giant would push back if it faced such demands again. In a letter to Representative Jim Jordan, the Republican chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Zuckerberg alleges that the officials, including those from the White House, repeatedly pressured Facebook for months to take down certain COVID-19 content, including humor and satire. He even went on to say that they pressured him and Facebook, otherwise known as Meta, to also downplay the Hunter Biden laptop story, which is something that goes back years, even before they arrived in the White House. I will post images and links and everything I just set up here on our Facebook page. But in the meantime, let's play a little bit of audio. This is Representative Laurel Lee, a Republican out of Florida, on Fox and Friends today talking about the Zuck situation. Clip one.
I mean, the whole idea of the First Amendment is that it allows us to express contrary ideas, to bring those out into the public square and let the public get to the bottom of what's the correct information. And what's worse, history tells the story. And we now know what the data shows us about the fact that there were effective therapeutics, the fact that it was appropriate to be prioritizing seniors and the vulnerable. So, you know, not only was it wrong for them to try to suppress opposing viewpoints, the actual data that we now have related to the pandemic demonstrates that these positions they were suppressing, that many of them were actually correct, and that the public would have benefited from having them out there and getting the option to make their own choices. Yeah.
So this is something that we have talked about. We thought it was happening. There have been some allegations put out there, statements made by members of Congress. Now we have the letter from the head of the company himself going, yeah, this happened.
And I will say this. I was reading a... in fact, I turn there now, an opinion piece from Jonathan Turley, who is a professor of law at George Washington University's law school. He's a contributor to Fox. He writes on topics related to the Bill of Rights, all sorts of things. Wesley, he's critical of Mark Zuckerberg, and this is what he says. He says Zuckerberg's sudden regret only came after his company fought for years to conceal the evidence of its work with the governor to censor opposing views.
Well, yeah, it looks like he's got caught, and now he's wanting to throw everybody under the bus, as opposed to the obvious, which is he didn't have a problem with this at the time, and he didn't have a problem with it until he got caught, or with hard evidence.
Yes.
And it's funny because it seems to me like truth is finally catching up with some people's conspiracy theories like myself at times. Because we felt and knew this was going on all the time, all along. We felt that way, but now we have the evidence. So,
yes,
truth is catching up with some people's old conspiracies.
In fact, Jonathan Turley says in this piece, he says it had all the, talking about Zuckerberg's belated contrition, he says it had all the genuine regret of a stalker found hiding under the bed of a victim.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did. You know, listen, your point is really salient here because we all felt this. Mm. Now, I will give kudos to you because you were one of the first people that I know out of the gate who started talking about the cover-up that was going on from the of the official, quote-unquote, government position on COVID and the vaccines and the masks, all that stuff, the social distancing. You were one of the first to unapologetically say something's wrong here, and it's especially we know it's wrong because they won't let contrary views out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
So you couldn't... when the moment you couldn't get a doctor's second opinion...
Yes.
There were a dozen things like that that began uncovered, you know, daily, or that you go, wait a minute, we always ask, everybody gets a second, I say everybody, most people feel at liberty to get a second doctor's opinion. And so when that was off the table, along with other things like that, that's when you go, wait a minute, something's off here. Because even when you go and have any form of an illness, they'll say, well, you know, we've checked everything. I'm not sure, but the symptoms look like this, but you may want to go
get a second opinion. Yeah. And so the deeper problem here, Chris, you as one of our news guys, you've been covering this story now, but we're talking, it's over 4 years.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, that we've been dealing with what happened, what actually happened to the world back during COVID. But at least equal to, but maybe a deeper problem is social media's conspiring, the social media companies conspiring with the federal government. And this is why Zuckerberg's forced admission is important to this discussion, because we now know we can't trust these people.
Right.
We can't trust these people. I trust Elon Musk because he wants there to be freedom of discussion on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Right.
But the Mark Zuckerbergs, I don't trust this guy as far as I can throw him.
Yeah. Mm. It's all the more reason to pay attention to stories that involve, like, heads of companies, even former heads of companies.
Like
that
Bill Gates.
Yeah, that still have close relationships with the companies they helped create and make a lot of money. Because a lot of big tech executives, for example, happen to be big corporate donors for Democrats running for office. Case in point, in recent days, Business Insider had this story. Google, Netflix, OpenAI executives to host Kamala Harris fundraiser. So Google executives. I mentioned Google because we've already had the stories out there where Google was making it to where if you were to Google Trump assassination attempt, you would find, like, Kamala Harris stories and things like that. It just completely ignored it. Now, they went on to explain it away and talk about an algorithm and okay.
Nobody believes them anymore.
Exactly, because it's the umpteenth example of big tech doing something to where people can't be up to speed on things.
Listen, AFA has been shadow banned for years by Facebook.
That's right.
We were saying this even before COVID. Mm-hmm. All right.
This goes back, what you're saying goes back a minimum of 10 years. I've been here 11, and the first 2 years I was here, our Facebook numbers grew exponentially.
Yes.
And then within just a day, everything shut off.
Yes.
By and large.
It was clear someone had turned off the faucet.
It was that obvious.
Yes.
And that's been going on at least 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Our listeners get frustrated if they are Facebook users. A post, they'll post something and it is blocked or otherwise removed because it doesn't meet these quote-unquote
guidelines,
standards. community guidelines, and you never find out why. Nope. Same thing with YouTube. All these groups are increasingly under suspicion from freedom-loving Americans because they are not playing the game the way we thought the game was being played. And Zuckerberg, listen, I don't trust Bill Gates.
Oh no.
You know, these people, these really wealthy people that I have to believe now, I sound like a conspiracy nut, but I have to believe they have a compound built somewhere far away in case of some sort of disaster. They're in it to preserve themselves. They don't care about me or my family.
Well, hit the highlights here and go back to the bullet points of what we just discussed about. So Mark Zuckerberg admitted three things in this. That we talked about these. The Biden-Harris administration, quote, pressured Facebook to censor Americans. Facebook did censor Americans, and then Facebook also throttled the Hunter Biden laptop story.
Correct.
Meaning that in the event that they let it run its course as natural, then the Hunter Biden laptop would have been more of a story discussed across all America, not just within the conservative movement.
Ed, we all remember the 50 or so members or former members of the intelligence branches signing this letter. Do you remember? I think was it 50 or I forget the number where they said this has the Hunter Biden laptop story has all the hallmarks of a Russian disinformation story.
Oh, yep.
And that's what led all these social media companies to block the story.
Well, it's also disturbing. Another point here is the fact that the federal government would get involved in private businesses to tell them what they can and can't say.
Yes.
That's horrifying.
And so now I'm sitting here going, okay, I don't trust these big social media companies.
Yeah.
Now I can't trust my own government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is where we're at in 2024. I'm not sure that wasn't me.
A very special today's issues.
That's right.
Anyway, maybe that's just God's way of telling me to just to take a step back, take a deep breath from this. But
no, I'm glad that we brought this story up because this needs to be understood amongst our listening audience and all that we can get this in front of, that this is not a conspiracy anymore. This is
right.
not. This is Mark Zuckerberg admitting that the federal government told him, pressured him to do certain things as it relates to specifically the COVID issue. And we all know there were countless things we were uncovering week by week, month by month, that would help people.
Yes.
It would help people.
Well, you remember the Zuckerbucks? Mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook giving money to go into big cities and register voters, but the fact of the matter is, it was Democrats.
That's right.
That they were okay. Yeah. So there are an increasing number of us in the middle and on the conservative side that maybe it's taken some folks a long time to come to this.
Mm-hmm.
But we understand who's for us and who's against us.
Yep.
It's worth pointing out that some of the people that pressured Facebook/Meta to do this are the same ones out there telling us this election is about freedom and saving democracy.
Yes.
Or they work for those people that want us to believe this election, and they're the ones using a big-name company to squelch information.
Yep. All right.
Yep.
Let's move on.
Well, let's do this story here. I found this in a post yesterday from a journalist by the name of Kyle Becker, who's worked for various big-name news outlets. Kyle shared this video of Vice President Harris being asked a question by a reporter about former President Trump and his thoughts on diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. You can tell from the video, I'll share the link to it, but you can tell from the video and even the audio I'm about to play that Vice President Harris was not prepared for this, nor did she have notes on how best to answer this question from a reporter, which, by the way, it's very rare to her to even speak to reporters, but nonetheless, clip two here.
On a different front, Axios this week reported that President Trump, if he gets a second term, will sort of dial back, for lack of a better term, DEI programs that the Biden administration has put in forth. I know you disagree with that. I obviously believe that you don't want him to get a second term. That said, if that does happen, what do you think that would do to race relations in this country?
Well, let me say we're going to win, so it's not going to happen. But I think that, listen, today is actually, I believe, an anniversary in terms of Dr. King, right? And I was just in Selma, and we acknowledged the 59th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. I think it's really important that we as Americans always embrace our history, the parts that we're proud of and the parts that we're not proud of but that we can't forget. And we should all agree that we should teach history, we should learn history if we're to ever have an accurate idea of where we want to go and where we don't want to go in the future. And that means also acknowledging the importance of diversity. It means acknowledging the importance of the fact that everyone should have equal opportunity to compete and equity. And then, of course, inclusion, that, you know, hey, let's look around the room and see who's not here, and did we leave the door open?
Okay, first, Wesley.
Let Walls do the speaking.
I'm sorry. Folks, I don't mean this to sound sexist, okay, because I love the sound of some women talking, okay?
Sure.
I do. This is not because Kamala Harris is a woman. Her voice is irritating. And other than the fact that I don't want communism to prosper in our country for the next 4 years, I don't want to listen to that voice for the next 4 years or that cackle. All right.
Yeah.
That's a personal thing.
Personal
that may
preference.
Be ad hominem. Okay. I apologize if people are offended by that. Her voice just irritates me. However, Kamala Harris is in trouble in any setting where she has to think on her feet and sound like she is competent with the issues.
That's right.
Because she's not.
There were several, and I just did it, but I'm not running for president here,
right.
Okay? I just did what I'm about to criticize her for. She has all kind of filler words.
Yes.
That's way too many. And she's that's not even a hostile situation.
Right.
I mean, you got an upcoming debate, potentially more than one, potentially, but I don't think they'll do more than one.
Yeah.
And then you've got, at some point, you got to think, even if it's the week before, at some point she's got to do an interview, don't you think?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now, again, you know, we've talked about playing with one hand behind your back. She's not going to have the hostile interviewed questions if it's one-on-one or in that sense. But at minimum, a debate. And if not, and if she doesn't take on any form of a hostile interview or debate, I do think that actually hurts her. I know. I think they her campaign thinks that Heidner, you know, kind of doing the Joe Biden 2020 yes. thing is a strategy. And there's days I can see how that would be the best thing. But on the other hand, this is such an important election. I even think the other side wants to know something because we didn't vote for you.
Right.
You know, you got right. put in all you got put here.
Yes.
You didn't get elected here. So I do think that at some point she's going to have to do, and back to what you just heard in the clip there, she's going to have a hard time when those couple of days come where she has to do the debate or potentially tough questions in an interview. She's going to really struggle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And listen,
and that's not a surprise.
There may be friends of Kamala Harris who say she's a great person and she's really smart. Okay. Lots of smart people aren't smart enough to be president.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. So you can be smart. You can be intelligent. I have no idea what her IQ is. Okay. This is not a comment about her IQ. I'm saying my opinion from what I've seen is she is in way over her head. Mm-hmm. And she is not competent to be president. She may have been competent to be vice president. I don't think so. She may have been competent to be the attorney general of the state of California. Maybe. Okay. But she's not competent to fill the position of the president of the United States. And the fact that the same media who knowingly and purposefully covered for a president who was in cognitive decline, Joe Biden, they knew it the whole time and covered for him, are now covering for a woman who is not competent to be president.
Right. No.
This it's almost criminal that they're doing this, but because of the First Amendment, guess what? You get to cover
right.
for a Manchurian candidate like Kamala Harris.
In other news from the campaign trail, this did not come as a shock to many people. Donald Trump did get another endorsement yesterday from a Democrat, former representative and 2020 presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, endorsed Trump at an event, a National Guard Association meeting in Detroit, Michigan, of all places. And, this morning, Tulsi Gabbard was still defending her endorsement, despite many people being upset with her. Clip six.
It's not about Democrats versus Republicans.
Right.
It's about having a president who stands for freedom, peace, and prosperity, which is Donald Trump, versus having a president in Kamala Harris who attacks our freedoms and censors us and uses political retaliation, who has pushed us to the brink of war, and who's created this economic hardship for Americans across the country.
All right, so I talked to my son, Tony. He came into my office this morning, Wesley, and this is what he said. I thought it was hilarious. He said, so Trump is assembling the Avengers because he's pulling these people in like RFK Jr.
That's right.
And then now Tulsi Gabbard. And it does kind of have this feel that he's pulling people in from different political backgrounds.
That may have not also liked each other at one point.
Right.
Yeah.
But now they realize the choice. Really, this is a little bit hyperbolic. But I'm not opposed to using hyperbole. The choice really kind of is between Trump and communism.
Yeah.
And so that's why you've got people like RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard going, you know what? It's not even that I'm against the Democratic Party. It's that I'm against these people who are on the far left trying to take us down a road that none of us want to go down.
Yeah, I think that's what you're seeing. And I do think this helps him a lot. I think it helps because he, you know, not to go down – a rabbit hole here, but Trump doesn't help himself sometimes. So right. I think getting endorsements like this does help him, kind of offset some of his setbacks at times. And of course, with the RFK, that was big. Was that 2 days ago? A couple days ago?
Yeah, it was the day after the Democratic convention.
Friday.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And their reasonings, if you listen to them, their reasonings make sense. There are a lot of the points that we discuss on today's issues and other places on AFR, and that you're hearing in other conservative news outlets, and they're sharing some of the same sentiments that we have. That ultimately it comes down to what you just described, and they. I'm kind of putting words in their mouth here, but what I'm hearing is we can survive with Trump. Maybe don't like him in many ways, because they are different parties.
Right,
Tulsi Gabbard and former President Donald Trump. But at the same time, we can't survive, and it's unmanageable if we continue to allow 8 million people into our borders.
Right.
I would imagine for Tulsi, and I don't know this for sure, but just knowing what little I know about her, I'm guessing the border's probably a big deal to her.
And the wars.
And the wars. That's a big deal. So her endorsement is a good thing for Trump, and I look forward to, seeing where this goes from here. Because do we have any more potential endorsements that could be in this tight camp, like an Avengers?
Well,
like your analogy.
I thought that was just a brilliant way of putting it.
I don't know if any of superheroes are going to vote for him, but I will say RFK said not long after his endorsement on Friday that other Democrats would follow his lead. So we could see more people.
He's probably, because he was talking to Trump for a while before this big announcement on Friday.
Correct.
And it was kind of the hand, he had tipped his hand at the beginning of the week. But before all that, he had been talking to Trump. So he's probably been talking to other people as well who are thinking of endorsing Trump. Anyway, I just thought it was a funny way to put it. Tip of the hat to my son for that.
It'd
Trump
be interesting.
Is assembling the Avengers.
It'd be interesting to compare the endorsements of the people who are endorsing Harris versus former President Trump.
Yeah.
I'd like to, because you've seen some of the people that she's partnered with.
Yeah. Right. So, all right. So, hey, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. We'll be right back with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.